Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
House and Senate leaders on Beacon Hill announced last night that they had reached an agreement on a landmark police reform and racial justice bill. It's up for a final vote at the State House today, and the 129-page proposal does many things, and included among that creates a new police accountability and oversight system, it bans chokeholds, and it sets new limits on no-knock warrants. Now, in a bit, we will get reaction to the proposal from law enforcement, but first, Reverend Mariama White Hammond of the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester joins us. She has been active in the police reform movement and in pressuring the State House to act on this bill. Reverend Mariama, welcome back.
It's good to be here.
So let's just start with your immediate reaction, your general reaction to the compromise that came out last night.
Well, as is always the case, there are a few things I still wish had been in there. But on the whole, I believe that Massachusetts has really taken the lead, quite frankly, in the country around police reform. And so I'm excited about the policies that were included in this bill. I think they give us a lot of space to shift and change our policing in our state. And there are challenges right here in Massachusetts. This is not about, you know, Minnesota or Georgia or anywhere else. This is about the challenges we have right here in our own state. And this bill really puts us on a good path to addressing quite a few things that we need to deal with.
There's a lot in it. There's a lot of stuff we'll never get to, you know, school resource officers, state police reforms, non-lethal weapon restrictions, facial recognition is addressed. But I want to ask you, what parts stand out to you as the most important elements from this compromise?
So you're right. There's a lot in there, and I encourage people to go ahead and read. There's things, just even small things like keeping our facial records with the Department of Motor Vehicles as opposed to allowing the police to have unfettered access to them. That's an example of something that's really good. But the thing I would say probably is the biggest thing for me is we are a country of laws, and we believe that when you have laws, you need some people to enforce them. The one loophole is that we don't have anyone enforcing the laws against police officers when that's required. And so I'm really excited about the Police Officer Standards and Training Board, often called POST, which will be a group of 9 people whose job it is to pay attention and make sure that the police are following the regulations and laws that have been set up for them. They'll participate in setting the standards, and they'll participate in monitoring and enforcing those standards when they are not being adequately followed. And we need that because in Springfield, Massachusetts, there's some real challenges. Recently, in last week, New Bedford came out with a report because there's some challenges that have been happening there. Boston is in the process of having that conversation. I know activists in Lynn and Worcester, in Holyoke, lots of people around the state have been holding each of their police departments accountable. And that's important. But this creates an overarching standard for how we expect police officers to behave. And they have strong power to pay attention, not just to individual police officers, which is important, but also to police departments to make sure that they're doing the best that they can, that they're really leaning into best practices.
So let's stay with POST for a second. They have, it's a civilian oversight board, 9 appointees. They've got certification and decertification authority, investigative and subpoena power. This is also a place where law enforcement are pushing back heavily. The Boston Police Patrolmen's Association calls the negotiations in the bill a betrayal. And the Massachusetts Coalition of Police says in part that the bill has, quote, punitive measures, layers and layers of new bureaucracy, and abridgment of basic due process rights of police, end quote. I'm assuming that refers to some of these investigative certification and decertification powers of POST. Right. What do you say to that pushback?
Well, I mean, the challenging thing is the narrative from the police from the very beginning is we don't have a problem. They've said this is about what happened to George Floyd in Minnesota. Maybe there's a problem in Florida or Texas, but not here. And that ignores the reality of the family of Yuri Stamps from Framingham, who was shot by the police because of no knock warrant. That ignores the family and friends of Malcolm Gracia in New Bedford. That ignores the fact that the Springfield Police Department is currently under investigation, even in the Trump administration. The Springfield Police Department is in trouble. It ignores the
by the Department of Justice,
Lynn.
Just to clarify for listeners.
Oh, yes, yes, sorry. The folks in Lynn and the folks in Boston. This is not just a Boston issue. Around the state, communities are having challenges figuring out how to hold police officers accountable. There are lots of police officers that do their job and do it well. But when we do not have a system for holding accountable and removing people who are not doing their job well, then there can be a lot of abuse in the system. And so I think this is actually a welcome opportunity for good police officers to be certified and supported in the ways that they need. But those who break the law and don't want to be held accountable, that doesn't work. The police literally exist because they believe that laws need to be enforced and people will do better when they know there's accountability. The same it's the same for police. They're human beings just like the rest of us. They will do better when there's accountability.
Let me ask you about that, too. I know you know that a big area of controversy throughout this entire police reform discussion has been qualified immunity, which essentially provides some civil liability protection for officers. The House and the Senate at the state capitol had different views on this. The final compromise has the softer approach to qualified immunity, which removes it for officers who lose their licenses for wrongdoing. And it also creates a commission to make further recommendations in 2021. But it doesn't completely eliminate qualified immunity. Are you satisfied with this compromise?
The honest truth is I preferred what was in the Senate version. But I am looking forward to that commission because there's been a lot of misinformation put out about what was even in the Senate version. You know, scaring people into believing that if you made that change, police officers and state workers were going to start losing their houses. And that's just absolutely not true. So while I would have liked more something more meaty, I look forward to the commission so that we can have an honest dialogue based on facts and really ask ourselves what makes the most sense. Again, accountability works for everyone. It's not safe to have any group of society that's completely unaccountable.
Let's talk for a minute about the 9-member board of the commission, which will include mm-hmm. 3 law enforcement officers, including a police chief appointed by the governor. It'll include a lawyer, a social worker, a number of other appointees. It's the most civilian control of any kind of oversight board in the country, as we understand it. It's yes. also a source of concern for law enforcement because only a third of that board is law enforcement. Briefly, before we let you go, are you comfortable with the makeup of that board?
Yes, that's one of the places I think we've made real progress. And again, this is not about being punitive towards the police. But the reality is every day, citizens pay their taxes. We relinquish some of our control and hand it over to the police. And we should have some role in making sure that when we give them the right to exercise deadly force, when we give them the right to enforce the laws, that they're willing to submit to the same kind of accountability that they're doling out. And I think this is a really great way for everyone that's affected, everyone that's part of this system, because we all are, to play a role in shaping it.
Reverend Mariama White Hammond, pastor at the New Roots AME Church in Dorchester, thanks for the time today. I appreciate your reactions.
It's good to be here.
So we also want to get law enforcement reaction on this historic police reform bill. We are lucky to be joined now by Boston Police Sergeant Eddie Crispin, the president of the Massachusetts Association of Minority Law Enforcement Officers. Sergeant Crispin, welcome back to Radio Boston. I understand you're joining us from your car.
I am. But I
appreciate
I'm happy
you
to
doing
be
it.
Here with you.
So let me start with asking you about your immediate reaction to the news of the compromise last night. What's your reaction to the bill?
Well, I was reading through it for the bulk of last night and this morning. I think the bill is good. I have some reservations about a few things in there. primarily the due process limitation as it relates to officers who have their licenses revoked by the Post Commission, not being able to appeal to civil service or a higher court. I'd like to see that be part of the bill. I know it's going before the governor. I'm not sure. I know it's in session now. So I hope that's something they'll look at. For me, I think we are in a world where we have to create greater transparency around policing, police tactics, procedures. And I think some of that happens in this bill, police education training. I think those things are good. But I worry about when we start trying to limit people's due process rights, especially we're in a world now where I think a lot of people are highly suspicious of police behavior. And that's fine with me. I want us to do our jobs better. But I also do not want to create a world where everybody thinks like the police are the bad guys. And by virtue of that, not give them the due process that everybody else has.
I've been struck over the last, 12 hours or so, Sergeant Crispin, by the strong response from various police groups. And I want to pick up on something you just said. According to the Boston Globe, the Massachusetts Coalition of Police said, quote, "They seek to punish police just for being police," end quote. Do you feel like you are working in an environment of that kind of hostility? Are you being punished in this bill for being police officers?
I don't know that I will go that far. I think the difference between my organization and many of the other police organizations, the vast majority of my members are people of color. So we have perspective on the need for change in policing. Some of our family members have been subject to some of the wrongs that this bill seeks to address. But I'm also mindful that as a police officer, we have to strike a balance, right? We have to find a place where police officers can still do their job without being in fear that they're going to lose their ability to support their families and themselves. So to the extent that this bill creates greater transparency, protects people of color who historically have been the victims of police action, I agree with it. But I think we've created a world now. I think, unfortunately, a lot of people kind of paint all police officers with the same brush.
I was really struck by the fact that in this 9-person board, which has, this is Post, the Police Officer Standards and Training Commission, it's a 9-person board. I asked Reverend Mariama White-Hammond about this before you came on. 3 of those members are law enforcement officers. You told WBUR earlier this summer that you're a lawyer and you've worked as a social worker. And I noted that 2 of the other appointment slots on the commission are for an attorney, a civil rights attorney, and a social worker. There has been pushback from police groups that there's not enough law enforcement representation, but you've got a little different perspective there. How are you thinking about this 9-member board and the various interests that it represents?
I think we can't create a board that's all police officers, but I also understand that some of these people on this board will have to have some perspective and understand how police officers do their job. If we put people on the board who don't have perspective and insight into police work, then oftentimes they will not understand police action. So I'd like to see that those people who are on the board also have some insight into policing, but also are mindful about some of the systemic social problems related to policing in the United States.
I understand, Sergeant Crispin, that you've actually had a chance to read most, if not all, of the legislation. We're talking a lot here, and much of the press over the last 12 to 18 hours is really focused on the big issues: qualified immunity, the commission, no-knock warrants, chokeholds. Is there anything else in this compromise bill that the State House plans to vote on this afternoon that you find particularly striking, either positive or negative, that you would call attention to?
I think there's a piece in there where the attorney general can sue on behalf of somebody who alleges civil rights violations. And if that is deemed to be the case, then they would sue the police officer for legal costs. I think that's a little bit problematic for me because the attorney general already receives funds to pursue those kind of cases. So I don't know why the police, the attorney general would then be able to sue for legal costs. That's just some of the smaller things. For me, that bothered me. I know I was part of the mayor's task force over the summer. We did a lot of hard work on trying to reform policing. And I know we put in place a lot of processes that will negate or substantially diminish the numbers of complaints against police officers. But I'm also mindful of the fact that a lot of the oversight is duplicated. So right now, as it stands, if you're a police officer, you misbehave, you're going to be, your actions are going to be looked at by the Internal Affairs. Then in the city of Boston, once we create this Office of Police Accountability and Transparency, they're going to be looked at, potentially the Civilian Review Board, and then also this post. So I get it, the need for people to have some oversight on police action, but at some point I think it's overly duplicated.
I just want to clarify for listeners, part of what you're talking about there are reforms that Boston Mayor Marty Walsh has said he's committed to putting in place for the Boston Police Department. We're just about out of time here. If this passes and is signed by the governor, Sergeant Crispin, in general, will you be at peace with police reform in Massachusetts?
Listen, I think we as police officers, as law enforcement people, we have to get acclimated to the change in policing. I think the notion of things are going to remain the same and we're going to continue to do things the same way we always have should not exist. We have to accept change and we'll adapt and continue to do the work that we do, and hopefully we'll continue to protect society and make people feel safer in their communities.
That is Boston Police Sergeant Eddie Crispin, who is the president of the Massachusetts Association of Minority Law Enforcement Officers. Thanks for your time, Sergeant. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Be well.
Stay tuned. We're going to take a quick break, and then there's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.